traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
There is a very dangerous and very effective destabilization campaign underway against this president, his administration, and his agenda. And what I hope that the president and his senior aides understand is that these forces are not just looking to delegitimize him. We often talk about that. Sure, they want to do that. They want to personally destroy him, destroy his presidency, and they would like to see the man in prison. I hope that the president understands. I am not overstating this, having been a victim of this myself. They are out for blood. And the reason they have to destroy him is that Donald Trump is an alien organism that has been injected into the body politic by the American people to reform it. He must not be allowed to succeed. They have swarmed him. They have swarmed everybody around him in order to reject him out of the system, just like any alien organism. He must not be allowed to succeed. And I hope that everybody around him now understands that this is a war and that they started a long time ago. But they will not end until they get the president of the United States.
Hey guys, I'm Monica Crowley, and this is the Monica Crowley Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here on this Tuesday as we begin yet another week. This is your go-to for hot liberty, a safe space for all of us thought criminals, independent thinkers, and happy warriors. On the socials, on Instagram, I'm at @MonicaCrowley_, and on Twitter and Truth Social, I'm at Monica Crowley. Also by email, I can be reached at Monica Crowley Podcast, all one word, MonicaCrowleyPodcast@gmail.com. All right, we've got a lot of excitement coming up here on the show. Later today, we have a very special and a very big conversation with former British Prime Minister Liz Truss. She was targeted by the international financial deep state. We think of the deep state as sort of one organism, that it's the security state, like the CIA, the NSA, working in conjunction with law enforcement like the DOJ and the FBI. We're going to get to them here in a minute. We think of that as the deep state, and that is very much the deep state and probably the most dangerous elements of the deep state. But the deep state has a lot of moving parts to it. The deep state is just sort of a catchphrase for all of these elemental weaponized forms of government, but also weaponized forms of society, all weaponized levers of power from big tech to the imperial media, to the culture like Hollywood. All of these things that have been weaponized to fundamentally transform the United States and the West away from individual liberty, away from limited government, and toward a Marxist kind of power-based model with them on top and us as serfs. All of those elements working together are considered what we call the deep state. Okay, so yes, the most dangerous elements are the ones that can take your freedom and destroy your life, like the FBI, the DOJ, the CIA, etc. And in fact, Tucker Carlson just sat down with Joe Rogan, and they were talking about this, and Tucker famously now said, look, I know people who are in Congress who are being blackmailed, who are, being extorted in various ways because they have weird sex lives or they have something in their past, but they're also terrified that the deep state is going to make up something. So even if they're clean as a whistle, they're terrified that the deep state is going to make some child porn and put it on their computer and then have a pretext to go arrest them and destroy their lives. This is how dangerous the deep state is. But it's not just limited to what I laid out. There are so many moving parts, as I said, and that also includes the financial system and the international financial system. This is a globalist deep state. And we have our domestic elements here at home, of course, like the CIA and the FBI, but they're working hand in glove with the deep state elements around the world. And Liz Truss, the former British prime minister, was a target of it. Her story, very similar to the one that faced Donald Trump, that continues to face Donald Trump. And we're going to talk about him here in just a minute. So former prime minister Liz Truss is going to join us here in a minute with her story and words of warning that you must hear. Later in the week, speaking of the Trump trials, we're going to talk with attorney Mike Davis, who is absolutely phenomenal. He heads up the Article 3 Project, which has been doing incredible legal work, pushing back on the deep state and this weaponization of government and this tyrannical lawfare being leveled at Donald Trump. So he's going to be here later in the week with a full breakdown of what we are seeing in Lower Manhattan. Okay. Also, in the days and weeks ahead, we're going to be joined by my friend, Governor Kristi Noem, and another friend, Tulsi Gabbard, who has a new book as well. So we're going to talk to those two ladies about where we are and where we are going, especially in this insane election year, assuming there is going to be an election. First up, though, the Monica memo. It's all the same revolution. I've talked to you guys about this before, but it bears repeating over and over again so that everybody understands this basic concept. It is all the same revolution. And while we talk about how it is a Marxist revolution, and in many ways it certainly is, the elements of communism, of Maoism, this is a Maoist revolution with struggle sessions and the cultural revolutionary aspects to it, like the assault on our children, the gender agenda, that is all Maoist, okay, to break apart the nuclear family, to break apart society. That at base is what all of this is about. It is about destabilizing American society so that the ideologues can come in and remake the country. This is what Barack Obama meant when he talked about the fundamental transformation of the nation. Nobody at the time stopped to think about, hey, man, what does he mean by that? Well, now we know. Thanks to me and this show and other shows who are telling you exactly what he meant by that. But at the time, in what, 2007, 2008, when he was running, nobody stopped to think, what did he mean by that? We're pretty happy with what the founders gave us. Individual liberty, limited government, strong national defense, free market capitalism, we're pretty good with that. And Obama was talking about fundamentally transforming all of that into what exactly? Nobody stopped to say, man, hey, what is he saying? Where is he taking the country? I wrote a whole book about this called What the Bleep Just Happened, covering his first term of the deconstruction of America. And he did it in 8 years, and Hillary was supposed to win and carry it forward another 8 to lock it all in. And then a man named Donald Trump came on the scene and threw a monkey wrench into the entire enterprise. This is why he is an existential threat. While we talk about the Marxism element of it, and it is 100% that, understand that while they are driven by this ideology, they're also driven by something much more basic and frankly, much more terrifying. And that is the drive to power. Power is what motivates them. Power and control, mostly power. You can have control when you have power. So they are seeking power at breakneck speed, consolidating it at the expense of you, at the expense of the Constitution, at the expense of rule of law. This is a full-on drive to create a new form of tyranny. And you're in it right now. Whether you see it or not, you're in it right now. This is one of the big objectives of this show, is to open everybody's eyes to where we are in this moment, because it's very dangerous. Exhibit one of how it is all the same revolution, and exhibit two, which we're going to deal with here in a minute, is this raging anti-Semitism and these pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist riots breaking out on the college campuses. Want to deal with that here in a second. Again, it is all the same revolution. First, though, Donald Trump still in this Manhattan kangaroo court. Everybody knows, and I mean everybody knows, this is a total farce, including the criminals prosecuting him, including the judge, including the leftist hyenas in the imperial media. Everybody knows that we are going through the motions here. You know, I thought about the other day an infamous phrase that Soviet citizens used to tell each other. They used to whisper because if they got caught, they could be thrown into the gulag. And we have a gulag now in Washington, D.C., holding nonviolent January 6 protesters for 3.5 years now without due process. We have our own gulag. So for people who say, Monica, you're crazy. What are you talking about? We're not in a tyranny. Yes, we are. And your fellow Americans are being subjected to the tyrannical whims of the regime right now as we speak. So everybody knows that this is a farce. And I was thinking about the infamous saying among Soviet citizens that they used to whisper to each other, we pretend to work and they pretend to pay us. That's communism. Okay, so everybody knows that it's a farce, but nobody is allowed to say it, at least out loud. This is where we are right now. So Trump is back in this kangaroo court. The judge, who is completely conflicted out, this Juan Merchan, he is completely biased, working with Letitia James. His daughter has raised $100 million for Democrats, including Adam Schiff, and she and her company, Campaign Advantage, something like that, they are still working with the Biden-Harris campaign. I mean, her social media avatar is Trump behind bars. The wife of the judge is also a radical left-wing activist. If you were trying to teach in law school a case study of a judge who is like max conflicted out, this would be this judge, Juan Merchan. Anyway, he put a gag order on Trump. So while Biden is out there campaigning and blasting Trump, Trump cannot say a word. The judge is holding a hearing today on whether or not Donald Trump has violated that gag order. It's so completely grotesque and unfair. He's holding a hearing today. He's got all kinds of options. These judges are omnipotent in these cases, all right? Talk about power and control. These judges are it. And, I mean, he could jail Donald Trump for being in violation of the gag order. He probably won't do that, but he could put on a hefty fine. And then on top of it, you've got this jury pool being drawn from, I think it was 85, 87% of New Yorkers who voted for Joe Biden, heavily Democrat, of course, maybe not heavily as Washington, D.C., where the Jack Smith farce is going on. That's 95% Democrat. New York is about 85%. But still, you've got a jury pool that, is incredibly biased. And they actually seated a few jurors because the Trump team ran out of exemptions, throwing people off the jury for being crazy biased against him. But there are a few on this jury that have sort of made it known, like, they're no fans of Donald Trump. I think there are two lawyers on this jury, so hopefully, you know, we can appeal to their sense of the law. We hope. We don't know. Who knows? But I guarantee you there's going to be a conviction here. There is no case. There never was a case. Donald Trump did not do anything wrong. The Biden DOJ under Merrick Garland refused to bring this case because they knew there was nothing here. Alvin Bragg, the Soros DA in New York, refused to bring the case originally because there was nothing here. But then one of the prosecutors, who was so, again, a communist seeking power, was so irritated that Bragg did not bring the case that he wrote a book and he was screaming about it publicly and basically humiliated Bragg into resurrecting the case. So here it is a zombie case where Donald Trump did nothing wrong. They slapped a gag order on him so he cannot talk about it. They've seated a biased jury pool. And get this. This is prosecution by ambush. Because now it's coming out that the prosecution in this case is springing witnesses and evidence and documents on the defense, on Trump's team, at the last minute. Literally the night before. In complete violation of what the rules dictate. But again, communists do whatever they want. Rules don't apply. And they're in a revolution. Yesterday, Donald Trump went to the sticks, the microphones, and blasted the Attorney General of the state of New York, Letitia James. Listen.
So on the Letitia James case, she's the worst attorney general in the country, by the way. On Letitia, and she keeps a lot of business out of New York, and businesses that are here are leaving. And that means jobs and a lot of revenue. Somebody's going to step in, the governor, somebody has to step in and do something because your businesses are fleeing. But on Letitia James, the money was put up, it's $175 million, and I don't think she's complaining about me for the first time ever. She's complaining about the company.
He also wrote this on True Social, quote, "This scam rush trial taking place in a 95% Democrat area is a planned and coordinated witch hunt that could have been brought 8 years ago, but everybody passed. Instead, they waited and brought it right in the middle of my presidential campaign against the worst and most incompetent president ever, crooked Joe Biden. It is being presided over by possibly the most conflicted judge in judicial history, who must be removed from this hoax immediately. I did nothing wrong." Exactly. But again, you know, this is textbook recusal on the part of this judge, but communists do whatever they want, so he is still presiding over this sham. Can Donald Trump get a fair trial in New York City? Obviously not. A recent Rasmussen poll finds 42% of U.S. voters believe Trump will get a fair trial. I don't know who they are. But a majority, 51%, do not believe Trump is likely to get a fair trial in New York City, including 31% who say a fair trial is not at all likely. Yes, that is exactly right, but that is exactly the point. The imperial media is all over the place, lying and warping perceptions, which is what they do because they are the propaganda arm of the communists, of the search for power. They're all aligned together. And these imperial media outlets are all part of the deep state. They are the amplification arm. They are state media. Here is CBS's John Dickerson gaslighting everybody that it's Trump destroying the legal system, when of course it's the communists doing exactly that.
There's a thoroughgoing effort to undermine the system of law going on outside the room, and inside the room, the defendant is protected, and we really hope protected by everybody behaving by the traditions, norms of the way you're supposed to behave in a courtroom, including the prosecutors and the jury. So you have these two things clashing, and that means it's not just about a case about a former president. It's about a challenge of whether the American legal system can be healthy and withstand the hurricane going on outside.
So again, this is textbook approaches to gaining power, holding power, seizing power. They have the state media do their dirty work and try to brainwash everybody and gaslight them. And this has happened throughout every dictatorship, through the history of the world. And now we've got it here out of Washington, D.C., right out of CBS. So there you go, turning everything upside down. Remember, they are masters of projection. Everything that they accuse our side of doing, they themselves are guilty of. It's a real tell. So when you're aware of it, you see it coming, and you're aware not to absorb it as the truth, to be aware that it is, in fact, an inverted lie to keep their narrative going, to seize ever more power over you. Of course, the whole point of all of this, well, there are many points of Trump going through this kangaroo court here, but of course, it's to keep Donald Trump as a political hostage. So he may not be in prison like the nonviolent January 6th defendants who have been rotting in jail without due process for almost 4 years now, But they've got him as a political hostage in a different kind of way. We have political prisoners in this country. Again, Monica, you're crazy. We're not in a Marxist revolution. This is not a tyranny. Oh, really? We've got political hostages in every direction, including the leading presidential candidate. The idea is to keep him as a political hostage, keep him off the campaign trail, drain his resources, and keep him distracted. Well, Joe Biden, God help us, is out there meandering aimlessly around a sheets in Pennsylvania, okay? But at least he's free to do that. Donald Trump is not free to do that. And he's chained to New York City. So we talk about political prisoners in this country. Donald Trump is certainly the primary one, the main objective for the Marxists on their march to total power. And then the ultimate objective, of course, is to jail him. I start every show now with my early quote from March of 2017 on Hannity on Fox News, where I believe I was the very first person to say that their ultimate objective is to imprison Donald Trump. They didn't just want to destroy him and his life and his presidency, although they certainly attempted to do all of that. They want the man imprisoned. Again, I begin the show with two different quotes from those early days of his presidency. And I remember people at the time saying, Monica, you're crazy. What are you talking about? We don't do that to our political opponents. Really? You are in a tyranny right now. And if you don't see it, you better see it fast. It's all the same revolution. Part two. Before we get to part three, which is the anti-Semitic riots going on. But I want to get to number two first. The uniparty jamboree over sending almost $100 billion that we don't have and cannot afford to other countries to secure their borders. Now, I realize Ukraine and Israel are two separate issues. I get it. But the vast majority of this $95.3 billion foreign aid package is going to Ukraine, $61 billion, and then about $28 billion going to Israel. Now, if all of this were paid for, and Rand Paul is out there saying, fine, you want to support Israel? Okay, I'm down with that, but it's got to be paid for. We've got to find savings elsewhere in the budget. Oh no, can't have that. This Ukraine war has been going on for, 3 years? Ukraine is clearly losing the war. The Russians are dominant, and we keep pouring tens of billions of dollars every couple of months into this absolute corrupt, bottomless black hole called Ukraine. A couple of months ago, Zelensky himself, the Ukrainian president, was warned that he and his administration were stealing way too much money. It was becoming way too obvious. So you might want to work a little harder because Joe Biden wants to hike your taxes. So you're paying more money to go to Ukraine so that Mrs. Zelensky can continue to go to Paris and buy another Chanel bag. It is a vast money laundering operation. This is not about democracy. This is not about putting off the Russians. This is about oil and gas fields in eastern Ukraine and who controls them. And it's about money laundering so that our deep state can get filthy rich with our tax money. That's what this is all about, and that's why they're working so damn hard to continue to get tens of billions of dollars, because it's lining their pockets. And the worst part about all of this is the betrayal of Speaker Mike Johnson and enough Republicans joining with the Democrats to keep this corrupt gravy train going. What is the point of having a Republican House? Tell me, what is the point? If we're not going to block this kind of corruption from continuing. Never mind the FISA, warrantless surveillance on American citizens, Mike Johnson and enough Republicans A-OK with that, A-OK with spending money like crazy, A-OK with funding the government at Pelosi levels, including the full weaponization of the government, is fully funded. Oh, but Monica, the Republicans only have a one-vote majority in the House. So Speaker Johnson has a really tough job. Yeah, I admit it's tough, but you know what? If the Democrats had a one-vote margin in the House, you better believe they would crack the whip, get everybody on board, and get everything they want while denying the Republicans everything they want. There'd be no negotiation. There'd be no Democrats coming over to the Republican side. You would never in a million years see it. But you see it constantly because we have too many weak Republicans. Now you see why Donald Trump appears so strong. Because he is. Because he stands on principle. Because he fights back. And he does not give an inch. Whereas way too many on our side are giving inches everywhere to the point where Mike Johnson is now the uniparty speaker. He's actually the Democrat speaker. It is a disgrace. Thank God for Marjorie Taylor Greene, for Matt Gaetz, for Andy Biggs, Andy Ogles, who was just on the show last week. There are a handful of them, Chip Roy, handful of them fighting for what's right. But they are far too few and far too limited here to have a real impact. They can stop some stuff, but not enough. Not enough. And we don't control the Senate. Chuck Schumer is driving that bus like a tyrant, so forget it. But if the shoe were on the other foot, the Democrats with a one-vote majority would wield raw, absolute power. Because this is what communists do. And our side is like, you know, having tea and cookies while the other side is exercising brute force. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. And I know you are too. It's all the same revolution. Speaking of which, example number three. There are these anti-Semitic, pro-Hamas, terrorist-sympathizing riots breaking out all across the country, mostly on college campuses for the moment, and being led by the Gaza camp that was created at Columbia University in New York. So if you just want to boil all this down, New York City is a microcosm of the Marxist revolution sweeping the country. And it's been ongoing since the 1930s. Right now, New York City is the microcosm, ground zero of it. Because downtown, you have an innocent man being railroaded in a Stalinist show trial. While uptown at Columbia University, you have this mass encampment, Gaza camps, of these pro-Hamas students and activists. They're all terrorist sympathizers. But in the end, it is all the same revolution, guys. This is what I keep telling you. Whether you go back 4 years to, or even further back to the Vietnam War protests where the idiot kids thought that they were protesting war. I'm anti-war. We're shutting down Columbia University back then. To be, you know, peace, love, and whatever. That was all created by the KGB to destabilize American society. Same thing here. Go back more recently. Antifa, Black Lives Matter, burning down the country 4 years ago, going into the election, destabilize the society, create chaos. Oh, we need a change in leadership. Americans are fearful and desperate. That is the point. So they use the superficial issue, or they create one, like they did with George Floyd, who died of a fentanyl overdose, not by cop. They manufacture the top line issue, and then they send the shock troops into the streets. And the imperial media covers it, so it's amplified, so it seems much bigger than it is. That reminds me of the Iranian Revolution in 1979, where the mullahs took control. It was incredible because the press made it sound like the Islamic fundamentalists driving that revolution were all over the country and taking control of the entire country. That Iranian Islamic revolution happened in the space of a couple of blocks in downtown Tehran. Now, it was enough for the mullahs to gain control because they had force and they had the military. They had it all so that they could then gain control over the country. But it started in a couple block radius. And the same thing is going on here. Do you remember a couple of years ago, Occupy Wall Street, which began downtown with these similar kinds of encampments? And then fast forward, and you had Antifa and Black Lives Matter 4 years ago. Now you've got these pro-Hamas terrorist sympathizers creating the same kind of encampments, CHAZ 2.0, at Columbia University. Well, Colombia has a president. Her name is Namat Minush Shafiq. Just going to leave that there. Who has not taken aggressive action. I mean, she's just starting to, but she has not taken aggressive action, and you can only assume it's because her sympathies lie with the protesters. She said that she was, quote, saddened by the events on campus. She denounced anti-Semitic language and intimidating and harassing behavior. She said, quote, the decibel of our disagreements has only increased in recent days. These tensions have been exploited, blah, blah. She's saddened. No, when your university is being taken over by domestic terrorists, you should not be saddened. You should be outraged and put your foot down and take aggressive action to keep, to number one, rid your campus of these agitators. Number two, keep the campus safe for all students and faculty and visitors, and that includes your Jewish students. But instead, she's bellyaching over how saddened she is. You had Columbia workers walk out yesterday. They're all anti-Israel. You've got the Gaza Strip encampments there on the campus. They're calling in the NYPD. They're rousing up some of this, but then the encampments just come back after they clean them out. You also have a rabbi at Columbia, Rabbi Eli Buchler, who sent a message to 300 Jewish students suggesting they leave campus for their own safety and not come back because the NYPD and the university, quote, cannot guarantee your safety. Yesterday, Columbia moved classes to virtual because, again, the protest was getting way too out of control because Jewish students were being targeted. They were not being allowed to proceed. And it's not just at Columbia. Columbia has long been a hotbed of rabid left-wing activism going back to Vietnam. But this is now happening at Yale. It's happening at MIT. It's happening at the University of North Carolina. It's expanding around the country. So if you liked Antifa and Black Lives Matter in 2020, you're going to love the Hamas protests of the summer of 2024. The targeting of Jews. It is absolutely appalling, you know, when the left comes, well, this is free speech. That is not at all what this is about. Again, this is all the same revolution, the revolution that you've seen in the streets, but also the revolution that has Donald Trump in a kangaroo court, the same revolution that has the deep state driving the bus on pouring money into Ukraine. It's all the same, guys. And the targeting of Jews is particularly appalling and outrageous and disgusting and maddening and horrifying because we just went through this a couple of decades ago where Jewish students are being blocked from going to class. That's Germany, 1935. Jewish students, in fact, one was told by police that, you know, you're too openly Jewish. So you may want to go and hide, what, in an attic? Well, we've got to identify Jewish students so we can protect them. Oh, maybe a yellow star on their clothes. Maybe that would help. Never again meant never again. But I just want to point out here the bigger context of this horrifying stuff that's going on. The bigger context is this is a mass revolution to destroy America, destroy the West. Let's hit a quick break here on that point. When we come back, we're going to deconstruct all of this with former British Prime Minister Liz Truss, who was targeted by the international deep state and removed from power so they could install their own puppet. Sound familiar? And she's got quite a story to tell. So we're going to deconstruct the international deep state with her because she's been a victim of it. Do not move. Sit tight. We'll be right back. Okay, listen up, guys. We all want to be as healthy as we can possibly be, right? Well, for me, Field of Greens is part of that answer because Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Field of Greens is literally one scoop a day, and it tastes great. I personally love the original greens flavor and the wild berry flavor, and it's completely improved my life. It actually makes me feel more alive and with more energy. I've also noticed that my hair and skin seem healthier. Plus, it can help with digestion and sleep. I just feel better and healthier overall. This is nutrition the way nature intended. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product, but if for any reason you don't, they'll give you a 100% money-back guarantee. And here's the best part. I got you 15% off your very first order and free rush shipping. Can't beat that. So visit fieldofgreens.com and use promo code Monica. That's promo code Monica at fieldofgreens.com. That's fieldofgreens.com, promo code Monica. Go get some Field of Greens and feel better today. Well, I've been so eagerly anticipating this conversation for quite a while because it isn't often that you get to speak to someone who has served at the very highest levels of government, only to be targeted and removed by the globalist deep state. We have spoken to several on this show, including President Trump, General Michael Flynn, and Steve Bannon. Our guest today is a very high-profile member of that club, of Heroes of the West. Liz Truss, MP, is the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, leader of the Conservative Party, as well as a former British Foreign Secretary. You can find her on X at Truss Liz. She has just published an incredibly important new book, which is part memoir, part policy and political prescription to pull us out of this very dark time before it's too late. The book is called 10 Years to Save the West, Leading the Revolution Against Globalism, Socialism, and the Liberal Establishment. Former British Prime Minister Liz Truss joins us now. Welcome, ma'am.
Great to be here.
Well, it's such an honor and a pleasure to have you here. And we first met in person earlier this year, I believe, at CPAC through our mutual friend, Nigel Farage. And I'm just so delighted to now know you, as I've been an admirer of yours for a very long time.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And I loved the CPAC conference. It was full of energy of conservatives who want to fight back.
Yes, which is exactly what we need. And we need more strong, tough, conservative, populist women like you as we serve on the front lines here in this war to save the West. You cover so much ground in this new book. It's brilliantly done. But before we get to the present battle, I'd like to frame our conversation by what happened to you, because you have written about it, you've talked about it, but it's very important framing. You wore and are a very popular member of parliament, Oxford educated, whip smart, tough, effective. When Prime Minister Boris Johnson resigned, you defeated Rishi Sunak to succeed him, and the Queen appointed you Prime Minister 2 days before her death, which must have been quite surreal. If you would, Prime Minister, please pick up the story from there, because you won that race fair and square, lead the Conservative Party, you become appointed Prime Minister, and then what happens?
Well, I'd run the race on the basis that I wanted to deliver conservative policies. People had voted for change when they voted Brexit in 2016. They voted again for big change when they voted for Boris in 2019. But the fact is, the change hadn't happened. Taxes were at a 70-year high in Britain. The government was getting bigger and bigger. We hadn't dealt with the problems on our borders. We saw all kinds of things like wokery happening in our schools, even though we had a Conservative government. And I wanted to take that on. And in particular, I wanted to get the economy growing. I wanted to cut taxes. I wanted to get on with fracking. And I wanted to hold down public spending, which was getting too high. So what I did, and I announced all this in the leadership election, I put forward that in a mini budget. And what I found is that mini budget was undermined by the economic establishment. So the night before the mini budget, the Bank of England sold £40 billion of government debt. And they also didn't alert me to the fact the market was a tinderbox because they had failed to properly regulate pension funds. So what happened as a result of their actions, there was a run on the markets. And they shifted all the blame onto me rather than taking responsibility for what happened. And in Britain, we have a very liberal media. We have lots of, I'm afraid the establishment has moved to the left. And there was a massive pile-on on my policies and my plans by what is the economic establishment. And ultimately, they forced me to reverse the policies. They pretty much had me at gunpoint saying that if I didn't reverse those policies, Britain would no longer be able to fund its debt. And what I find appalling about this situation is that these people were not elected by anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, my policies had a popular mandate, but they were using their power in the markets, their power over monetary policy to essentially stop my policies being implemented.
So this, I want the American audience and our audience around the world to understand what you just laid out. In response to the grave cost of living crisis in the UK, you come into office and you advanced a set of pro-growth economic policies to try to rein in government spending, get inflation under control. In normal circumstances, a new prime minister would be allowed a grace period to properly affect her policies. You were given no such honeymoon period. Why?
That is absolutely right. First of all, the Bank of England made grave errors in their regulation of the pension market. It was a bit similar to what happened in 2008 in the financial crisis, and they shifted the blame onto me. But they also sold government bonds the night before we put the budget out. So rather than supporting me, which is what they should have been doing as their responsibility is financial stability, they actively undermined my budget. And there was a huge pile on. And what I find is that much of the liberal media in Britain are keener to have a go at Conservative policies and Conservative politicians than they are to hold unelected bureaucrats to account.
This is why one of the many reasons why, Prime Minister, your story is so incredibly important, because everybody in the West needs to understand that the deep state, that phrase is a catchphrase, but it encompasses a lot of different entities. The deep state comes in many different forms. There is, of course, the security state, intelligence agencies, law enforcement. There is the administrative state, the permanent bureaucracy. There is what my first boss, former President Richard Nixon, called the imperial media, which is the propaganda arm for all of this. And then there is the financial deep state. They all work together. Each Western nation has its own deep state, and they also work transnationally on a global level. So what you're describing is not just the British financial deep state came for you, but also the international globalist financial deep state came for you.
That's right. So I had the IMF attacking my policies for being unfair. Mm-hmm. I had President Biden attacking my policies from an ice cream parlor in Oregon, no less, saying that it was wrong to reduce the top rate of tax, even though the top rate of tax in Britain is far higher than the top rate of tax in the United States. So what I experienced wasn't just a battle in Britain, it was the international economic establishment piling onto my policies. And the reason I think this is they know that these policies work, but they have a vested interest in keeping government big, in having much regulations, in keeping Britain close to the European Union. And they don't want the competition. You know, Biden wants to carry on with Bidenomics, spending more money, raising inflation in the United States. And he did not want to see Britain following a different path.
It is all about power and control and the globalist agenda of ultimately creating a one world government led by them, of course, where the rest of us are serfs. And that agenda is very dark indeed. And it plays into this mass illegal immigration coming into the UK, coming into America. It's about erasing all of our boundaries and all of our borders. And you're right on the front lines of that with Brexit and so on. So they clearly wanted you gone and they wanted you replaced with a man you had beaten fair and square, the current Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, because he is one of them carrying out their globalist agenda, whereas you could not be controlled because you were speaking for the people. It all sounds awfully familiar as someone who has long supported President Trump. So having gone through this grotesque situation, Prime Minister, what do you now know about these dark, shadowy, unelected, unaccountable forces that you did not know then?
Well, I didn't realize how powerful they were. I knew what their views were. I'd worked in the Treasury as a minister for 2 years. I knew that they believed in high taxes, lots of regulation, high immigration. What I didn't realize is how ruthless they would be in undermining me. You know, there was leaking to the press, there was briefing against me, there was blame shifting. And I did, maybe I was naive, but I thought I would be given the opportunity to deliver the agenda that people had actually voted for. So one of the points in my book, 10 Years to Save the West, is a warning to America that I want to see President Trump elected. I hope he gets elected. He's got the right policies. But that is not enough on its own because the administrative state has got more powerful and there will be an almighty backlash against policies like cutting taxes, supply-side policies, pro-growth policies that America needs and the whole West needs in order to take on our opponents, our enemies overseas.
You know, it's so interesting and horrifying what happened to you. And it just points out another example. And when you pair it with what happened with President Trump, what continues to happen with President Trump, from the Russia hoax to two fake impeachments to this outrageous lawfare that they're leveling against him now, and then what you faced, our side faces a deficit of what the other side has in spades, which is not just power and controlling all of the levers of power, but they have an abundance of creativity and imagination about how to go after people like you. I mean, you never saw that financial bullet coming. Donald Trump never saw the Russia hoax bullet coming. How do our leaders who want to serve the people as you do, how do you anticipate that kind of threat coming at you when you're trying to do the people's work?
What I've learned is the left are not just fighting at the ballot box now. They're using any means possible to get their way. Mm-hmm. They've taken over our institutions with their woke agenda, their pro-human rights agenda. They are using lawfare and the courts to pursue their aims because they cannot get the support of the public. And what I think we as Conservatives need to do to fight back against this is galvanize popular support, because ultimately, people in Britain, people in America don't want this left-wing agenda. They don't want 100, you know, children in our schools being taught there are 100 genders. You know, they don't want illegal immigration where people are not deported even if they've committed crimes in our country. They don't want these high taxes and big government and endless regulations. And what we have to do is galvanize their support to take on the left. But we are going to have to fight very, very hard, because the left are, I believe, more determined and more virulent, and they're prepared to use completely unsavory tactics to get their way.
They've also been at this for nearly a century. I know in the United States, it started in the 1930s as a KGB operation to infiltrate the United States and defeat us from within. So they've been at this for a very long time. And that's why now we are all at the tipping point. Prime Minister, when you look at the number of existential threats facing the West, we have the worldwide Marxist movement, which again is a century old. We've got the Chinese Communist Party. We've got the Islamists, and we've got the transnational globalists, like the World Economic Forum, the WHO, the UN, and others. Each are incredibly powerful on their own. And together, they really do pose a dire existential threat, which is what you write about in 10 Years to Save the West. So, first of all, how did we allow this to happen over the last several decades? And how best, apart from mobilizing a public outrage and support for getting away from this agenda, since they control everything at this point, how do we counter them?
Well, the biggest threat to me is the threat to our own societies. It's people in our own countries questioning our way of life and Western civilization. And that is what we have to fight tooth and nail. And too many conservatives have kowtowed to these arguments. Mm-hmm. They've tried to meet these people halfway, but you can't compromise with terrorists. You know, you cannot allow a halfway house on these issues. So we need brave people who are prepared to take them on. And this is why the election this year in the US, I think, is one of the most important elections that we've ever seen, because the left are getting more powerful. They have taken over the institutions, and we need to do things like defunding those institutions, abolishing them, making sure there's proper political accountability for decisions that are made over taxpayers' money. And it is about recruiting people, but making sure those people are brave and they are prepared to stand up for conservative values.
The title of your book is 10 Years to Save the West. I love your sense of optimism in that title, that we have 10 years. I'm not entirely convinced that we have that long. I think the hour is very late.
It's certainly imminent, the potential destruction of the West, if we don't act now. But I don't think this is going to be a quick situation to turn around. The fact is that, you know, whether it's our universities, our corporations, our schools, the takeover of left-wing ideology is very, very profound. And that is why I set out a 10-year timeframe, because we need to spend that time actually changing what's happening here in the United States and in the UK and right across the West.
It is going to be a long-term project. You are absolutely right about that, because the left, all of these forces have been at this a long time, so it's going to require a long-term project for us and a lot of sacrifice. You know, you just raised a point that I think is really important about British society and where it is, American society, all Western societies really having been subjected to decades of indoctrination. And I think about other very dangerous times when we faced existential threats, as in World War II with Nazi Germany or the Cold War with the Soviet Union. We were able to defeat those enemies largely because we had cohesive patriotic societies. We no longer really have that. We have a lot of good people in our countries, for sure, but we no longer have that sense of cohesion and unitary drive toward the same goal. And it's not just our external enemies. The enemies are now within. Are you optimistic that within those 10 years that you lay out, according to the plan you lay out, are you optimistic we can do this?
We can do this, and we must do this. Otherwise, it will be the end of our way of life. And that would be horrible and terrible. And what gives me hope? Well, what gives me hope is when I talk to people in my constituency in Norfolk, they want these things to change. They are proud of being British. They're proud of what we've contributed to the world. They don't want to see this woke nonsense. They don't want to see our society undermined. And that is what gives me hope, that I think most people in Britain agree with that. The problem is that we have had this establishment who believe that our country's best days are behind us, and we need to appease these forces in our society, and we need to appease these totalitarian regimes. And what we need to do is make sure the voice of the people is actually delivered.
A very important point and final question for you, Prime Minister, on that very point. Here in the United States, we have the regime, as I call it, the security state, law enforcement, Department of Justice, FBI. They are carrying out arrests of normal Americans, jailing them, trying to jail Donald Trump, who is the premier example of America First and the kind of agenda that you are trying to champion in the UK. So there are a lot of average Americans who believe as we do, but are afraid to speak out. They don't want to get jailed. They don't want to get canceled. They don't want to get fired. There is a huge intimidation blanket over this country, and I think over the West, for average people to speak out, to take the fight on. So, final question for you. What do you want the average American and British citizen to know as we fight this war together? How do we summon the courage and the will to do this?
Well, we can win this war. And it is a war. You know, the left do want us. They don't just want to argue against our points. They don't even want us to be able to say what we believe in the first place. And the first thing we have to do is be prepared to speak out. And that will ultimately enable us to change the system. We need to be as determined as these left-wing woke warriors to take back control of our society and give freedom back to people.
Courage. And there is power in numbers. The left certainly knows that, but we need to get reacquainted with that concept as well, because there are more of us than there are of them. The book is called 10 Years to Save the West. It is monumentally important. Go get it immediately wherever books are sold. The author is former British Prime Minister Liz Truss. Prime Minister, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you here, ma'am. Thank you.
Great to be on the show. Thank you.
Okay, guys, what a huge show today, right? Very, very important show. Please tell everybody you know, all your friends, family, colleagues, about the Monica Crowley podcast, because we need to wake up everybody as we go into this election. Everybody's eyes need to be open. So please tell everybody you know, spread the word about the Monica Crowley podcast. Thank you so much, and for checking out our great sponsors. Have a good start to your week. I will see you right back here on Thursday. We're going to deconstruct the latest in the Trump kangaroo court. We'll deal with the latest polls. We'll be joined by Mike Davis as well. So I will see you then. This episode of the Monica Crowley Podcast was produced by Behakel Entertainment, LLC.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.